Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And let's just say when a national holiday fits right in the middle of the week, when Congress is out of town, there is not a lot of breaking news to go through, but there are still some stories worth talking about, and one of those is our good martini. New poll out from CNN shows that the president is up by 3 points nationwide. That is not good news, in case you thought we've defected. But among the 15 so-called swing states, Mitt Romney is up 8 points, 51-43. Some of those states are now considered to be pretty much solid red. Others would be considered to be leaning blue, but I'm not a huge fan of these cluster battleground state polls because it's hard to break them down state by state that way, but you'd obviously much rather be up 8 than down 8.
Yeah, you know, obviously it's 51% to 43%. You describe it well, better to be up than down, and that certainly seems a little bit of a cushion. But then you look at the states that are in there, just going through it, it is Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, Missouri, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Wisconsin. I sound a little bit like Howard Dean as I, you know, get very excited rattling off a list of states. You look at that list and you're thinking, boy, you know, Arizona really ought to be in Romney's pocket. Indiana, there's no, you know, even though Obama won it in 08, there's been no serious talk of him taking it this time. North Carolina looks like it should be in the Republican column this year and pretty safe. And, you know, Missouri was one of those states that McCain won by the skin of his teeth. He's probably going to, you know, this should be a reliably Republican. So there are four pretty reliably Republican ones on the list of swing states. You're like, huh, maybe that's giving Romney a bit of a boost. But then you look at, like, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Iowa, as you know, even, maybe even Colorado in that category of states that most people had looked as being blue to light blue. And so the idea of, you know, if you throw them to the mix, maybe this is a balanced group of 15 battleground states, which, oh, by the way, CNN, narrow it down next time. It doesn't do us that much good. For whatever amount you spent for all these swing states, you might have done more good just saving up and doing each one of these states separately to give us be a little more edifying that way. Bottom line, this is pretty good news. I'm going to be watching the individual swing states. I know there's a poll out from the Civitas Institute that has Romney up 50% to 45% in North Carolina. You know, as I said, it's a state that's looking pretty Republican this year. It could be kind of interesting to watch the Democrats hold their convention in Charlotte and not win that state. Not unbelievably good news for Romney. And in fact, a lot of the polls have kind of seen a bit of a slump lately. Worth noting, it's not that Obama's really going up. In a lot of these polls, he remains in the mid to high 40s, maybe peaking out at about 50. But Romney's lost a few points. Some people say that's the Bain ads working over there. So there's some work cut out for the Romney campaign. But, you know, it is July. Traditionally, and you know, this is the July swoon, which most folks kind of tune out of the races. The Olympics are coming up. 4th of July weekend coming up. So if you're going to have bad news, this is not the worst time of year to have it.
One of the things Mitt Romney has said repeatedly as he has gotten closer and closer to clinching the nomination, and he's clinched a delegate-wise, is to talk about what the president has done wrong, in his opinion, and what he would do correctly and to correct Obama's mistakes. And one of the very quick stump speeches and victory speeches he had is, he passed Obamacare, I'll repeal it. Well, now that the Supreme Court has declared it constitutional, people who hate Obamacare and want to see it go will be looking to elect a Republican Congress and obviously elect Mitt Romney. And so you'd think all Republicans are on board. Hurrah. Come on. Join us. This is our last chance to get rid of this monstrosity. Enter Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, the Eeyore of the bunch here. Quote, if you thought it was a good idea for the federal government to go in this direction, I'd say the odds are still on your side. Because it's a lot harder to undo something than it is to stop it in the first place. And so he just went on and on to talk about how difficult it is to really undo something of this magnitude. Jim, that doesn't fit into a stump speech real well.
Nor does it, yeah. But let's not say, and now let's contribute to Republicans to win the Senate. Yay! you know, Senator McConnell gets quite a bit of grief from some vocal grassroots activists. I'm thinking of Eric Erickson over at Red State and a couple other bloggers. And sometimes it's undeserved. On the other hand, Senator McConnell, this is not the right time to lay out how difficult it is. It will be difficult, but as we've talked, you know, since the decision came down, look, you know, the Congress can take out the funding for the enforcement of Obamacare. That certainly will complicate a great deal of things. They'll only need 51% to repeal the tax increase that is the mandate. A President Romney's Health and Human Services Secretary could grant exemptions to anyone who wanted one. Fully repealing Obamacare may be more challenging than people think, but there are a lot of ways to gum up the works and to make it no longer operational. So I'm kind of surprised to see McConnell taking this tone, even if he's legislatively or technically correct. I don't think it's the rallying cry you want, and I think that, you know, there's time to worry about the details. At this point, since none of these things are doable, other than a symbolic vote to repeal, it's never going to, you know, get signed into law by President Obama, and Harry Reid will probably make sure that it never really goes anywhere. The only thing to be done now is to get more folks on our side in office. It's kind of frustrating that McConnell would choose now to have this particular tone. It's Eeyore-like is a very good description there.
Got to get the party back on message here. I know Thursday was a punch in the gut. It was to everyone who hates the law and wants to see it go. But now we know exactly what it's going to take to dismantle this thing as much as possible, and to basically throw cold water on your own campaign strategy is not helpful, even if you are worried about how difficult it might be. The fact that this has been labeled a tax, as Jim mentioned, actually makes some of this easier than it was just a few days ago. On to martini number three now, Jim, and I guess we kind of knew this was coming, but it's always tiresome when it does. There are wildfires this summer because, you know, there have never been wildfires before. There was a freak windstorm that hit the mid-Atlantic, and it's getting a lot of media attention because, well, that's where a lot of the media live. And, of course, there's a heat wave hitting much of the country, and it's very rough. A lot of people are suffering as a result of it. But it's not unheard of, and neither is the claim from the global warming crowd that this is exactly what we warned you about a generation ago if we didn't do something about all this. Horrendous, this is from the Associated Press. Horrendous wildfires, oppressive heat waves, devastating droughts, flooding from giant deluges, and a powerful freak windstorm called a derecho. These are the kinds of extremes climate scientists have predicted will come with climate change, although it's far too early to say that is the cause. Deeper into the story, it says, actually, Europe's doing pretty fine this summer. Other summers, we've had it mild, and they've had it much rougher. Jim, no matter what happens, whether it's mild, whether it's extreme, no matter what happens, that's exactly what we warned you was going to happen if we don't do something about this. Pass cap and trade now.
You know, Greg, when it went from global warming to climate change, it was a great strategic move on the part of the Greens. Because traditionally, you know, the old joke was every time Al Gore had some sort of, you know, global warming conference, usually a snowstorm would greet it.
Right.
And people kind of laugh. Gee, you know, at a, you know, the global warming conference was canceled because of ice storms. You know, people kind of laugh and point out, well, gee whiz, you know, if it's the world is getting warmer, shouldn't it be getting warmer instead of, you know, getting cold, you know, having giant ice storms and snowstorms and blizzards and such. So now the term is climate change. And basically, think about this, Greg, the only way we can just prove this and you know, intellectually disarm the Greens is if the weather today is precisely the same as it was the day before, the day before that, the day before that. Because anything is climate change. If the high of 95 is, you know, 94 tomorrow, that's climate change. I believe it was Stephen Colbert had said climate change is a new term for what we used to call weather. Now, I am one of those guys who believes that, you know, human activity could be influencing the environment. You look at, you know, so many factories in China that they can't see the sky, and you figure, okay, that may not be good, necessarily be good news. But taking any serious action on climate change, even if the U.S. stopped all carbon production entirely, if we basically were zapped off the face of the earth, and I don't want to give any foreign power any ideas about this, that basically the impact on the overall level of carbon in the atmosphere would be negligible. So the only way you could really reduce carbon in the atmosphere is to actually stop, you know, make significant, not just slow down the economy of the United States or even reduction in economic activity in the United States. I remember John Huntsman, who had been a fairly vocal guy on climate change, went over to China and came back and basically said, look, there's no point in us instituting a cap and trade system that would cripple our own economy unless the Chinese and the Indians are willing to do the same. And oh, by the way, they're not. So the real question is, does climate change, you know, how much of it is a result of human activity and how much of a result is a result of, you know, solar activity? And then coupled with that, how much do we need to mitigate this? Because at least in the short term, to medium term, there's going to be serious benefits to the United States for climate change. What's that, Greg? I'll let you pick up your jaw off the floor for that. But the growing season is actually growing longer. Eventually, we're going to open up the Northwest Passage, which will take, you know, the cost of shipping from the East Coast to the West Coast by sea, or from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean or back, will cost about $1 million cheaper once we're able to sail north of Canada. So these are all the upsides of global warming. I wrote about this in an op-ed for the Philadelphia Inquirer last year. It made all the Greens set their hair on fire. or they would have done so if it wasn't for the carbon emissions from that. And it's worth noting that this is a, whenever there's any type of extreme, you know, unusual weather or surprising weather or disastrous weather, the old global warming climate change trope gets rolled out. It is kind of an all-purpose excuse for these folks. And inevitably, it all comes down to some variation of buy my product, elect my candidate, or pass my law. And inevitably, none of those things by themselves will reduce climate change.
No, absolutely not. But the hysteria goes on. One final very quick glass raise to Andy Griffith. Jim, I will choose to remember him for his great work on, obviously, the Andy Griffith Show, Matlock, and so many other things. I will not choose to remember his excruciating Medicare commercials for the president's health care plan, but a great legacy for the vast majority of his entertainment career.
He was, and I think it's one of those things we look, as far as I know, you look at his political donations and such, Griffith was always a strong supporter of the Democratic Party. Obviously, not the preferred choice of you or me, but, you know, I think one of the things in life is to look past a person's political views sometimes and, you know, appreciate him as an actor as is. So let's just kind of avert our eyes from the painful commercials and ads that he did and just remember for what he was, which was a great actor and a Hollywood legend.
Absolutely. Jim, enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your 4th of July. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Happy 4th, everyone. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. He's Jim Garrity of National Review. Please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.